Hello, 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 hello. Welcome to Life with the Girlfriends with Christine Marie and
That's
Julie.
That's me. I'm Christine Marie.
I'm Julie. And
I'm the mom.
Yes. And I'm Julie with a cold, a head cold.
Yeah.
And
there's something sexy about it, though, Julie. It sounds good.
My voice has dropped an octave or a half an octave, which I know always sounds so sexy, which is great because our first guest, you know, he's got a sexy name, but he's a fitness guru, and I'm like, and I'm sick, and I'm like, oh, great. He's going to say, what you doing, Julie?
Where's your zinc? Where's your vitamin C?
But I love his name. I'm sure he's Italian, you know. I mean, I just love it. But we're going to have a very fun show today, everyone out there. And we got a guest our first half hour, fitness guru Rico Marciano. I love his name. And we're going to talk about his book Chariots of Courage. And I think he also did a documentary about that as well. And he really is an awesome fitness person, fitness guru, but he also helps the disabled. And I love that because, you know, me and Mom, my whole life, helped adults with disabilities.
You've got your degree in special education.
And then as working with adults and then just, you know, so this man is after my own heart. But like I said, I've got a cold. I'm not feeling it. And so I've asked all the lovelies out there and all the girlfriends out there too. If you hear me cough away, just know it's just because of that. And then after our great interview, we're going to talk about, we don't have another guest, because Mom and I really wanted to talk about something. And it's kind of fun because Mom, you know,
yes.
Rico also produces, writes, he's in entertainment. And we want to talk about your book that you wrote, your nonfiction, or your fiction book.
Mm-hmm.
And also this idea, are we able to really do what we love in life? So many times we set the default on a different game plan in some sense.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do what we love, but I want to say that we have to be able to tweak it a little bit. Tweak what we love or tweak the way we see what we love.
I mean, sometimes too, you know, we tend to lose ourselves in the householders, you know, when we become householders. And
yes.
then we lose ourselves, we compromise, and we do all those good things. And that's what my next nonfiction book is going to be about. But, yeah, we'll talk about that later on tonight, too.
Yeah, so we're going to have fun. We're going to talk about our dreams, just having fun. And I'm also got I've got a non-dream question. It's kind of like an etiquette question to propose to my mom or pose to my
you
mom.
You do.
I do, and I've been holding back because I think I want your honest opinion, and I only get that on the radio.
Me? Okay, yeah, that's the only time I give you my honest opinion.
Well, I might get you off guard once you get off balance, and you're like, why is she asking this on the radio? Because I am. That's the reason
that's
why.
Right. Okay, I'm up for it, girlfriend.
So let's go right to bringing our first guest in, because
yes.
I can't wait. We've already talked about him a little bit. He's global fitness guru. Oh, Rico Marciano, I love that. And Rico, are you there?
I am surely here. How could I resist two women?
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Exactly. This is going to be a very fun night for us, that's for sure. So I'm going to toot your horn a little bit because, you know, your profession is physical fitness. You're a motivational speaker. You have also motivational exercises, programs for disabled. You know, you just really do it all. You also are in entertainment. You've done a documentary, Chariots of Courage. Your book, is your book out now or is it coming out? Your book, Chariots of Courage, about the same subject. Is that out now, Rico?
Nope, it is. No, you know, I'm like some eccentric author. You know, I'm doing all the revisions myself and giving it to the editors and the designers, and then would go to the publishers. Actually, the truth of it is, it was done a year ago, and I got a computer virus, which ate up my whole computer, including the book.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Yeah,
oh, my gosh. So I had to ask myself a question, okay? Do I want to whine about it, or am I going to brush the dust off the seat of my pants and just rewrite it? So I did, and it's a lot better the second first draft.
I understand that totally.
We have, Rico, and you have just touched a subject that we might just talk about for a second, because May 21st, our book came out, The Clutterfly Effect, Tweak Your Total Transformation by Decluttering Your Life, and we got to our number one spot in Amazon. We were like, so happy, yay. But in the midst of all that, I was unaware that I was being hacked, and all my other websites were hacked.
All of them.
All of them, and I lost a lot of information. And felt discouraged.
Yeah, you feel demoralized.
Yes.
You feel violated.
Yes. And so we've asked ourselves the same question, what am I going to do? And you've picked up, you know, you've dusted yourself off. We like to say we put on our big girl panties and just get going again. But in the background, I'm like, going, what the hell does this really mean?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
So I love this bet that you just said, oh, screw it, I'll write it, it'll be better. And it is. And I love that. I love that. So you also live this pretty extraordinary life, but you've also had a pretty crazy upbringing as well. So I want to talk more about that and how you've turned yourself into this awesomely cool dude. You know, you performed in theater, movies, TV. I like you perform in a honky-tonk bar. You know.
Well, tell us a couple of movies that you were in.
Yeah, it was in the, you know, it's funny because it was nothing that was planned. I mean, I did sports like anybody else, you know, would do in those days. I played every sport and excelled in all of them, of course. But one of the coaches was the director of the new performing arts and that the government was giving us, which was like the FAME, you know, FAME program,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
The movie FAME. And so
yeah.
They were looking for guys to be in this program. And we're all going, nah. So the guy walks away, and he turns around, and he goes, okay, I forgot to tell you, there's a million pretty girls in this organization. And all of a sudden, everybody waving their hands, wanting to be in the, you know, in the thing. And I tell you, I learned a lot. It's, you know, one thing you learn when you do different things, football team, a theater team, a football team, a business team, it's all the same. It's all the principles you use in football, the same principles you use in business. So for me, it was an easy adjustment, and I really excelled in theater and film and stage, everything.
Yeah. I love that. I love how you're into excelling. Christine and I have been really talking about that because there's this part, I can just tell in your voice, you're one of those guys that goes in 100%. No matter what you're doing right now in your life, you're in 100%. And it's that decision-making process. It's like, well, I'm not going to jump to 100%.
Right.
It doesn't mean you're not going to fail or make mistakes. It
right.
just means your commitment level is at 100. And I hear in your voice, Rico, that your commitment level, no matter what you're doing, is 100%. So I just kind of want to talk about your past a little bit. And I know that you didn't grow up in paradise. You know, am I correct? And, you know, kind of tell me about your upbringing a little bit.
Well, I grew up in the tenements, obviously, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Truthfully, it was very Capra-esque with the old tenement buildings on both sides of the street, lined up, probably 200 of them. And I could get to anywhere in 30 seconds. I go right out my stoop, I could be playing stickball. I go behind the alleyway, I could be getting my mother groceries in like 30 seconds. You know, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, everything was right there. So that was how I grew up. And I did grow up in a very rough neighborhood, but I will tell you that when you do that, everybody in the neighborhood watches out for each other. And I miss that, really, being down here in Florida where nobody really knows anybody. I do
because
I work in the public eye.
Geographically, where did you grow up geographically?
You know, I grew up in the Northeast. I don't get specific because I still got relatives there. And believe me,
right.
The last time I was on television, people are banging on my mother's door. She's 83 years old. She's banging on my mother's door. Oh, hey, this, that. And she hates the public eye. So
yeah.
So I told her I was doing an interview today. She goes, don't mention me. She goes,
hey, you brought that wrong.
We're not going to mention Rico's mama.
No, she's tough as a 5-cent steak. She looks like that actress Maureen O'Hara. Do you remember Maureen O'Hara, the actress?
Sure.
It was the John Wayne movies and stuff. Yeah, she's like that. And that's
Yeah. Well, Maureen O'Hara was, you know, beautiful, red hair, and, you know.
Yeah, it's weird when you got a mother that's pretty because all your friends start staring at her and you're going, hey, that's my mother, you know? I mean, it's really a strange thing when that happens.
Well, and I like how you say you wouldn't have it any other way. So many times.
No, I wouldn't have it any other way. We have 100 kids on my block, so you figure that all ages, you know, everybody was active. There was no one that was ever obese. And so it was a very interesting way to grow up. And I always tell people that adversity stimulates creativity. And when I say that, because we had nothing, we had to sort of make up games like kick the can or, you know, whatever it might have been. We learned to take care of things because we knew if we lost the football, we weren't going to get another one. So we had the same football for like 10 years in the neighborhood. So it's really weird how you become responsible, even though you would think that in that type of a neighborhood you wouldn't.
No. And, you know, and growing up there, how did that kind of, you know, like, tell us what ignited your passions for life, because you are very passionate. I'm looking at your picture right now. I see you got this big smile, but in your voice, you can tell you're one of those men that are just passionate for life, passionate for everything. Is there a time when you can tell, like, that's what did it?
Well, when you grow up like that, first of all, I'm a believer that we all have a certain blueprint or what my Eastern medicine people call footprints. And what happens is we all have some form of a footprint in our lives that we're going to be a certain way when we're born. And I think that I'm just prone to being very passionate. It was this way in everything I ever did forever. So whether it was music or whether it was nightclubs or whether it was in the boxing ring, whatever it might have been, I was passionate about everything.
Do you think, I'm going to put you in a spot, because as you've been training your clients, being a trainer, a motivational trainer as well, can someone who's not prone to that passion, that 100% passion, can that be learned, or can it be amped up, the kind of their footprint, can it be magnified in some sense, do you think?
I would think that most of the people, you know, when I used to run a large corporation, I ran the largest health and fitness corporation in the world. And when I used to interview people, I had certain things I would look for. And one of them was their attitude, their confidence level. And if they didn't have it, I never hired them. There were just certain pre-qualifications you look for. And I'm not sure that you can instill that in somebody. I think you can bring out as much as they have, but it's not, I'll be perfectly frank with you, if they haven't got it, they haven't got it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it's interesting you say, because I kind of agree with you. I think that we all have it in us a form, what's authentic to who we are.
Right.
And we can amp up that quality, but it may never look like your quality, your passion, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you go, okay, well, now I got to do my life the way I can. But I think, like you said, if you got it, you got it, because you meet those people. I've met them where, like, they're ready to ignite any moment, their passion, you know, it's there. It's right there on the surface. And there are other people who are, you know, and I'll put me in the side there, too, maybe a little bit like, hey, I got to work out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it takes a little bit of you know, doing a lot of interior work to really maintain my passion. And so forth. So I'll come out there and say that. You know, I know that you're
sometimes
very into
you it. Just need a person motivating you. I'm not going to say that if you have it and I can see it in you, I can bring it out of you. But if you don't have it, is what I was saying. If you don't have it, period.
Right.
But I can hear it in your voice, both of you. So.
Now I think that's true. I think that's true to having a good mentor or a good coach.
Yeah.
Can really bring it out of you because you feel, you know, you feel that other person's passion, and then you catch it, and I like confidence that's real. I mean, I've met people that are totally confident, but like, whoa, I don't get why you are. But when you know your stuff, and you know, you have that legitimate, authentic confidence, there's There's really nothing cooler than that, you know. Say, Rico, how did all that, you know, all the entertainment and stuff enter your life?
Well, you got to realize, in the, again, here we are in the, I go back to my adversity stimulates creativity. I mean, there was a guy that was 3 years old on my block, 3 years old, and he was like a virtuoso guitar player at 3 years old. Now, think about it. He had this old silver tone guitar, which is beaten up, and here he was. I just figured everybody knew how to play at 3 years old, you know? So the stimulation, my cousin Donna Gina, she played six instruments. I mean, so, and I only played guitar. I wanted to learn piano, but I left home. Actually, I was getting paid more a night than my father was a week during those days when I was like late teens, and I used to, I was asked to, if I could write musical jingles for radio and television. So I went over, I listened to them, I took the one sheets home, and I wound up, you know, making money there too. So it's really just, you got to seize that opportunity. And at a young age, ignorance is bliss, trust me.
You know what? So cool you said that, because
yeah.
You're right. When you're young,
you don't
realize how hard those how few those opportunities come sometimes. But when they do come, you're like, yeah, I'll say yes. What the hell? I'll say yes.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen? But you know, Christine and I have been talking about this. It's like this idea that you got to be also prepared for opportunity, and you got to be willing to say yes. And also be willing to say, you know what, I want to be ready for the next opportunity that comes my way. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start practicing a little
yeah,
more.
Yeah, if you hadn't been willing to play that guitar and practice that guitar and be, you know, great at that guitar, no matter how many opportunities would it come your way, it wouldn't have mattered because you wouldn't have been prepared.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, music is wonderful. I mean, who doesn't love music, first of all? And putting a band together anywhere from, you know, a 4-5-piece band to a 12-piece big band, more or less, that's a big difference. But you just, again, ignorance is bliss. You don't know that you shouldn't be able to do this, so you do it anyways. Isn't that funny? When you get rid of those blockages in your mind, those mental blocks, you can basically do anything you want to.
Oh, it's so true. You know, we all have these, like, you know, you come against your ceilings, your limiting belief systems. And then, you know, when most people don't realize they've come against it, but once you become conscious and you go, wait a minute, I don't know how I earned that one, but I don't need it. If I learned it, I can unlearn it. You know, a limiting belief system, a ceiling.
Well, the idea of having these self-sabotaging feelings stems from other things. I mean, that's what I use. I use all kinds of psychological, thought patterns that when I work with my disabled people, because I mean it's something. And but in as far as you know the movies and stuff that you asked me, it's like you know I was sitting around one day and I was in theater, and all that stuff. So my friend says, "Hey, there's a movie by Franco Zeffirelli being filmed down in Fort Lauderdale, no Hialeah, at the Hialeah racetrack called The Champ." John Voight and Faye Dunaway.
Yeah, oh, sure,
so
yeah, the remake,
I said, okay, yeah, sure, I'll go. So we went down and spent like 5 days doing bit roles. I mean, I played a boxer mm-hmm. one day, played a crowd scene another day. I don't know, we walked, groomed horses the next day. I mean, it was just one of those things, you know. You turn in your pictures and, I just was always wanted. I wish I could say that I was Laurence Olivier, but I wasn't. I was just, I had passion, and they loved me. That's all.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool.
So what, I just want to find out,
made
you decide to go to Florida, though? I mean, because here you are, you know, northeastern dude.
And then you find yourself in South
Florida. Oh, yeah.
Florida.
Well,
that was a culture shock.
When I was a little kid, I used to watch these black and white movies on Saturday afternoons about Havana. And I thought, damn, Havana, wild women, conga drums, music all the time. Wow, that's for me, you know? So, but then, of course, you couldn't get into Havana because it was Castro was there. So,
right.
So what happened was I was watching some old Elvis movie one day, and I thought, wow, Fort Lauderdale, that looks like fun. Tropical, palm trees, etc. So, bing, bang, boom. I was in at the time. I think we were singing in a hotel up in like Quebec or something, and it was like 10 degrees below zero, and nobody spoke English. Oh, it was horrible up there. And so what happened was I was in the lobby, and I picked up this pamphlet, and it was a girl in a bikini by a swimming pool, and it said, "Join me in beautiful Fort Lauderdale, Florida." And I'm just 10 degrees below up there. So I look at, I give it to my business partner, and I go, "Book us in down there." And that was 6 weeks later, we were here, you know, and that was it.
You know what?
So cool.
Yeah, you're a pretty cool dude, and I can see that you have the confidence and you're willing to say yes. So many times we shut ourselves off to what could be better for us because we're afraid of change.
Yeah, or we're afraid, how do we make the money?
Yes, and like, well, what happens when we get down there and nothing works, nothing happens? And that's all part of life. Sometimes we do make changes and they don't work. But there are times, too, when you know, I'm not working in Quebec anymore. I'm kind of below.
Everybody's
spoken
French,
Quebec?
I bet.
You lived in Quebec? No, I didn't live in Quebec. I was just playing in Quebec, by the way, just so I tell you.
But the truth is, living in northeastern states, that can get pretty cold there.
Oh, yeah, because we're out here by Chicago, and it's like, you know, We've experienced 10 and 20 below for sure.
Oh, yeah. I remember a couple of years ago, we had a 25 below zero day, and I'm like, what the heck? This is incredible. But I want to
you guys get my number close, I'm sure now. If you, for those below zero days, you'll be calling me up. Hey, Rico, can I use your spare bedroom?
Exactly.
Only, Rico, if you have a pool. We love to have a pool down in sunny Florida.
I got something else called the second largest bathtub in the world, which is the Caribbean Ocean and the
Pacific Ocean. Love it. That's awesome.
I do have a swimming pool too, but I mean, I sit here. I love it right here because I can look out and there's Jack Nicklaus made a big, huge golf course on the other side of the Intercoastal Waterway, so I get the water and I get the golf course, so there's not a lot of people, you know, to look at you. You know, it seems like if you get in a certain direction, it's like open, all open over there.
It's like you own the
whole
thing.
Jill,
I was always wondering, though. He said Caribbean, and I always wonder, is it Caribbean or is it Caribbean? But now I know. It's Caribbean.
Yeah, you know,
I always call it Caribbean.
A lot of people call it, it's named after the Carib Indians, so they call it the Caribbean or the Caribbean. It doesn't really matter. You hear one person say, it's like tomato or tomato, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but that's the key. So what happens in life here is that I wrote and produced a play for when I was in college, and I had the whole theater department to come and audition. So there's like 500 people auditioning for my play that I wrote. And so we had it was good because we had so many good people in it. And the purpose of doing it wasn't really to make a lot of money because I wasn't sure we would or not. It didn't really matter. But for the practice and to try and attract investors and stuff, you know. So, you know, I just keep going no matter what. I don't stop. I don't consider anything failing. I consider it a learning process. How's that?
Right. Did you ever think when you were growing up that this would be your life, this incredible journey that you've had? Did you know then this is what was going to happen?
No, you know what? When I was young, I'm going to tell you about Flo Fuller. You're going to love this. This is the greatest story. Flo Fuller was like 80 years old, okay? And she was a former concert pianist. She was actually right there in the beginning when Carnegie Hall was built and performed with Toscanini. So, but now she's 80 years old. She's living by herself in one of the tenements. She had her baby grand, and that tenement building, every apartment had a fireplace. So my mother used to say, "Go help Mrs. Fuller with her wood for a fireplace." So I'd go over and take wood up to her fireplace, and she said, "Hey, I heard that you're a songbird," she says. "Your mother told me that." And So she says, "You probably like listening to that rock and roll Perry Como, right?" So I started laughing, you know. I mean, you know, so you got to realize this is a long time ago. So she says, "Come over here and give an old lady a thrill and sing a song for me." And I'm telling you, when she closed her eyes, her whole body language was 30 years old again. And her fingers, which were all crumply, were like sliding across the keys. It was really freaky, but I remember this very well. And I remember singing this song, "Catch a Falling Star" by Perry Como, really an old song. I don't know why. I was like 7 or 8 years old. And she was going to put me on the Ted Mack Original Amateur Hour. And so my mother goes, "No, I don't want you around show business people." You know, although my mother had a trained soprano voice, but if you want to know the truth, my mother would only sing, if you will, for God, like church, cantatas, stuff like that. So, funny stuff.
Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket. Save it for a rainy day.
Oh, I
know that
song. I'm in love now. I'm in love. I'm in love all of a sudden.
I got more Perry Como. I got more.
Oh, damn, I can't handle any more, girls. You know, I start fainting like you're Elvis, a female Elvis.
So, you know, so after college, you landed a job that would eventually change your life, right? Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, I needed a job. I mean, I used to sing at the Rathskeller in college, and I had a job in some haberdashery that the college got for me. But, you know, I mean, there's no time to study. You know, you figure you're working or you're in school all the time. So when I got out of school, I still had one job. And I said, "Well, I'm going to go get a job at this health club that my roommate worked at." And it was, like I said, the largest. Actually, you said you're in Chicago. One of their main bases was out of Chicago on Michigan Avenue, I think. Main headquarters was it over there.
Are you talking about
Wire?
Yeah.
And so what happened was I went, got a job, and within weeks, I mean, I just like skyrocketed up the charts with them, and I became one of the heads, and within a couple of years, I was out in California at what's called the National Fitness Awards Consortium, where I met everybody. Like, you know, Schwarzenegger worked for us as a spokesperson. Dr. Wayne Dyer loved me. I got to get him to do a blurb in my book, I think.
You should, yeah.
I should, right? Well, Dr. Wayne Dyer, it's a funny story. Dr. Wayne Dyer, I was on the plane coming back from Los Angeles. They put me up in the Bonaventure Hotel and stuff. And I was coming back on the red eye, and I'm sitting there, and who do you think? What a serendipitous moment. The person with the ticket next to me, Dr. Wayne Dyer. I had a free one-on-one six-hour, flight of Dr. Dyer's philosophies, you know, the power of intention. I mean, he taught me a lot. And I said, "I'm just curious, why are you so interested in me?" And he goes, "Rico, you're unforgettable." And so, anyway, so that said, about 4 years later, I'm with my daughter in a restaurant, and this guy is looking at me, and he comes toward me, and I go, "Oh, great, what is this now, right?" And he says, "Italian guy, right?" And I says, "Yeah." He says, "Rocco." And I go, "No, Rico, Dr. Dyer?" And he says, "Yeah." I says, "Wow, I'm impressed." I said, "How did you remember me?" And he goes, "What did I tell you, Rico? You're unforgettable." Let me run outside and get my book and our newest book, and I'll sign it for you. So I kept those two books all these years.
Sure.
Go ahead. I went out on my own, and I started going to different clubs that needed someone that knew how to run health clubs and knew something about physiology and stuff. So I did that for a couple of years. Then I got divorced, and I was working at a nice club, smaller, and it was way up here, though, not down in Miami. So I came up here, did pretty well, actually, but it wasn't until I went to the rehab center. I worked at a physical fitness, you know, rehabilitation center at a doctor's office, a holistic doctor's office. And I started doing something there because nobody else had to, didn't want to do it, and that was working with people in wheelchairs that had disabilities, traumatic brain injuries, spinal cord injuries, strokes, etc. And so that said, one of the guys that was opening up a new Gold's Gym in the area here, now this Gold's Gym was not one of the steroid drugs for sale out on the sign outdoors. This was a prototype for the new style of Gold's Gym, which was like, you know, we had a damn $20,000 suspended floor for aerobics and seminars that I would do with the doctors, and there was you know, babysitting and you know what I mean, juice bars.
Yeah,
everything.
Sure. Very high end, very family oriented, very health oriented.
Oh, high end. So yeah. What happened was the first day I was there, I rented space from this big company, and the first day I was there, some guy jumps off the treadmill, comes up to me and said, "Hey," he goes, "Listen, I'm an editor at ABC. Do you think I could, would you mind if I called a reporter and got her over here to do a story on you and this guy in the wheelchair?" What did she think I was going to say, no? And so first day on, they were all there and they all come, and I got to tell you, it was like they just love me. I don't know why, but and I always had good stories for them, and I always delivered. And so they molded me into a media magnet, and it was like a domino theory. One thing led to the next thing, to the next thing, and et cetera. So it was
That's
a big
very
thing.
Awesome. That's awesome.
And I know.
And you kind of just, you know, like you said, for some reason, you're a media magnet.
Well, you know, the big thing was is that I think it's because I'm confident and I know my stuff. And
right,
I think that's like a perpetual thing. In other words, you're confident because you know your stuff, or do you know your stuff because you're confident? I don't know. But the point is, I think that when you know your stuff and you prove it, you just don't say it. In my neighborhood, we had a saying that actions are the only truth, words are cheap. And so... Yeah, so I was always proving it. I feel like all my life I've had to prove myself, and that can be tiring sometimes, but,
sure.
You know, I will tell you, though, and I got to tell you this because it's just I feel I should. There was a lot of opportunities I missed, too. Miami Vice, I had a guy walk in my office one night, and he said, "Hey," he goes, "you should be in the movies," and I said, "Movies?" And I thought to myself, wow, three people have told me that this week. And his name was Jack De Niro. And yes, he is Robert De Niro's only uncle and Robert Sr.'s brother. So, and he asked me, he goes, "Listen," he goes, "I showed him some one sheets of the stuff about the play. Remember I told you about the play I wrote, right?" And he loved it.
Right.
He wanted to do the play and try to raise money for a movie. So, I mean, I just out of the blue, by the way. This is like, I was in my office in the back. How did he even run into me, right? So what happened was he took the script and he said, "Listen, the investors are sort of, you know, wondering, since New York's a lot more expensive to shoot than Florida, is there any way that we could see how much we can shoot of it in, like, maybe interior scenes or whatever down here in Florida?" I said, "I'll take it to a casting director and do a script breakdown." So I made an appointment, went down to Miami, walked in the door. Honestly, 5 seconds after I got in, the casting director comes out of the back and she goes, "Oh, my God, I got two roles for you to try out for." And I look around thinking she's talking to somebody else, and it was me. And I said, "No, I'm here for the script breakdown." She goes, yeah, later. And 20 minutes later, I had my pick of any role, the two roles that I was reading for on Miami Vice. So an hour later, I was with a producer, John Nicolella, over in Miami Beach, and I wound up doing this one show. Now, the point to the story, though, is that, unfortunately, I was getting divorced at that time. I moved up here, and it just wasn't easy to go and audition and then come back, you know. So
yeah. Oh yeah.
I missed a lot of opportunities during that time. Trust me.
Mm-hmm. And yet somehow there are other opportunities waiting for you. I mean, I guess it is true when one door closes, another door opens. You know, Rico, to our girlfriends out there, to our lovelies out there, what would be one thing you'd want them to leave this interview with? I mean, besides just your amazing story of inspiration and motivation, what's one thing that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I think for anybody listening, the big thing that I pride myself in is that I like to always give the audience, the viewers, the listeners, whatever, the key factor, what I promote actually constantly, is the idea that if these people in wheelchairs that I train who are severely disabled can overcome fears, doubts, and, you know, the idea of being permanently disabled after being whole, and they come into the gym every day and train and accomplish things, even if it's a little, that if they can do it, then the people that are able-bodied listening to this show right now should be saying, wow, if they can do it, I can do it. And that's what I promote with people. And that's why they come to me.
They're damn lucky to have a Rico Marciano on their side. That's for sure. Hey, Rico, you're going to, I sang Perry Como for you, right? You're gonna love me again because I'm Italian.
Italian. You and me,
what are we going to do?
This sounds romantic to me. I don't know.
Was D'Antonio. D'Antonio.
Antonio, so. Oh, wow.
Exactly. I know. So should I just hang up now? Leave you alone. I don't know. Rico, do you have a web page, or how can people get a hold of you if they have any questions for you,
either email. I like email. I'd like people to go to my business page, which is LinkedIn, and look at it, because everything is on that business page. I mean, everything that you could possibly want to know is there. So all the endorsements from all of my, from the anchors and all the TV people that have interviewed me, and there's all kinds of crazy things there. And that's the best place, I feel.
Perfect.
And it's LinkedIn.com, and you just go to N, and then Rico hyphen Marciano, Marciano.
Got it.
And I'm not
And what now? I didn't hear you. What?
Oh, no. I said, that's very cool. I'm not really familiar with, I need help with LinkedIn, because I'm learning. That's my goal, to learn more about LinkedIn. But so everybody out there who can do it, you know, I'm sure there's a search engine there for LinkedIn.
Oh, sure.
It's just Rico Marciano. I love that.
Well, the big thing with LinkedIn is that it's good for business, and especially when you're in the entertainment business, you've got a radio show all the time, and I'm just learning about a lot of the things. I just wanted a place to people are more serious on LinkedIn. They're business people from all over the world. Okay. I mean, you should see the people I have.
I mean, 6,000 people. Yeah.
Okay.
And every day I get 400 emails.
We'll definitely have to look at LinkedIn, Julie.
Yeah, dang, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
if you need me, I'll be there for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to show up on that big ocean, the Caribbean Ocean.
Rico,
big bathtub called the Caribbean.
Exactly. Rico, I just want to say thank you so, so much for being on Life of the Girlfriends tonight. It's been a joy, a pleasure. And
catch a falling star and put it in
your pocket. Oh, you're pushing it now. You are going overboard. I better watch myself.
I know. I can't stop.
I can't stop either.
Thanks so much, Rico. We had a blast.
You're
have a great night. Love to you.
All right.
Awesome.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Love it. Love the interview. Awesome. You know, I feel flushed, and I don't know if I feel hot because I just got done interviewing Rico or because of my cold. I don't know.
Yeah.
It could be both.
It could be both.
But I certainly have,
what a life, right? What a life.
Well, I'm not saying I'm a coward, because I'm not a coward. But I do think that I don't easily say yes sometimes when I, because I have a nice life. I have a good life. So it's hard for me when opportunity comes my way where I have to shake things up big time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happened a couple times.
I think it'd be nice, though, to have a guy like Rico on your side, though. I mean,
yeah.
That's the kind of, like, you know, let's just call Rico. You know, that would be
Isn't that a commercial? Isn't that like a company, Rico? Or
oh, Rico? I don't
Mako.
Know.
Maybe it's Mako. I don't know.
But
very, I love it. And it's, I love it when somebody has passion and motivation. And it's so true. It's like when you work with people with disabilities, you know, whether they be physical, mental, whatever, there is, and they, and you see them achieving, and you're like, what the hell am I doing? What am I complaining about?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
It's that commitment level of 100% in and going for even the small amount of improvement.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to, we tell
And from the, you know, from the horse's mouth, you know, if these people can try, if these people can do it, you certainly, you know, can have the courage.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
And I can't wait for his book to come out.
I know. His
Chariots of Courage.
And Chariots of Courage is a documentary. It's, you know, he wrote it, produced it, and is writing his book on it as well. And that's very, very cool. Very cool.
Speaking of producers, I'm going to tell you a quick story.
Okay.
Unless you wanted to.
No, go for it.
As you know, I love to write.
Yes.
You know, I love to write nonfiction. I love to write self-help, you know, that kind of stuff. But I'm also a fiction writer, and I've had a story that I wrote called Sinkhole de Mayo, Birth of the Zomboys, and
on Amazon.
On Amazon,
and
that's
Kindle.
Right. And I've, you know, and it's about an amateur group of wrestlers, and, you know, and they become the Zomboys because they're performing at a Sinkhole de Mayo Festival.
Cinco de Mayo Festival.
A Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah.
Yes, but it turns into a Sinkhole de Mayo.
Exactly.
And so I have been sort of kicking it around, you know, to think about this being, you know, this could be a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had some people give me some phone numbers and things like that. And so this week I just decided to make, you know, a phone call. And so then phone calls turned into emails and we were kind of back and forth, and this guy was, he wasn't a producer, but he was sort of a book-to-film access guy, whatever that means. And, you know, and he goes, look, love your idea, love your concept, great, you know, great fiction. He goes, but let me tell you about Hollywood. And I go, wait, let me put my big girl panties on first. And it was just like, let me tell you, kid.
Yeah.
You know, there's 10,000 scripts, you know, floating around.
He said 100,000.
Or something, yeah, 100,000 at any given time. And last year, only 240 movies got made. You know, can you bring a big name to this movie? No. Can you bring a producer? Can you bring money to this movie?
Not really.
Not the kind you're talking about.
Yeah, I haven't worried yet.
He goes, so what you got is a good idea. You got a good little book here, kiddo, you know. But I'm telling you, you know, give it up. You know, it's not going to happen. And so I kind of, you know, I had the experience of being disillusioned this week, you know. And you know what? It felt kind of good. I liked this guy that he was, you know, truthful. But I also, and it also felt good, like, okay, I like to write. But I also like to write screenplays.
Right.
You know, I could still do a, but you know, the truth is, if you write a book, you can get it out there.
Yeah.
If you write a screenplay, it's going to sit in your drawer or somebody's,
A bigger miracle has to occur in some sense.
Yeah, I remember like 30 years ago, maybe 20, I sent a screenplay into an agent, you know. Or was it a book? I can't remember. But it came back right away, and it said, not formatted properly, not going to even read it.
Yes.
I was like, what? I took it personally, you know. I was like, wow, couldn't you have had mercy on a young person, you know? And
no, that's not my job.
No,
mercy's not part
me?
Of my repertoire. What are you talking about, girlfriend?
So I just want to say this week was a week of being disillusioned and just going to stay writing my, you know, I've got part two being written of my Zomboys, you know, trilogy. And do what I do, do what I like to do, not worry about the stupid ass, you know, screenplay. I don't need it.
Well, you know,
I don't want it. Don't even, you can even throw it at me and
okay.
I won't even.
I'm just going to talk to you about this a little bit because I think, I don't want, here's what we talked about. Here's why I want to say my two cents.
Mm-hmm.
He was being totally honest because here you were going in the conventional way. You don't have connections. And I've been listening to people who have connections talk about how hard it is to write,
mm-hmm.
to get a screenplay made.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't hard to write a screenplay, and you can definitely write one, but then to get it from your hands to out there.
To God's ears.
Exactly. You know, requires something more. And it's sort of like this feeling of like, okay, how do I express my art in the best way for me? We all have to co-create. I mean, to me, if you keep writing and writing your characters and you get a following, or
mm-hmm.
it may naturally turn into a screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
It may naturally turn into a movie. And it's sort of like this idea of pushing the river
mm-hmm.
or going with the flow.
Yeah, that's what you talked about with Rico, being prepared for the opportunity, which I was, you know, really in no way prepared because I have a little bit of a following of people that love the Zomboys and Tony Camaro, but not probably like I would need to say, hey, look at me, look at this following. You know,
right, exactly. But it's also about, I know who you were talking to, and you know, they wanted a lot of your money, too. They said, oh, but if you give us a lot of money, we'll push
mm-hmm.
it around Hollywood for you.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you're like, and you said, just give me the odds. We really, just tell me the truth. You know, truth is, I think,
truth
yeah.
is you're going to be have a lot of money.
Exactly. And I was at least happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I really want to go to this idea because I can still hear in your voice how you're having to let that go.
Yes.
And it's not fun because here we have these dreams of ours, and some of the dreams are based in ego. And I don't want to say ego is a bad word, but this idea that, you know, I have clients that just see themselves getting an Academy Award or walking down the red carpet and all this stuff. And I'm like, awesome, you know, what you want, you can go for and achieve. But let's open up the way it comes to you. You know, the essence of what you want, you can definitely get. But we're in this co-creative universe. And sometimes we can, you know, we have to just be a little more open to how it comes to us. I remember
I think that I remember listening to Esther, and she said, you can, but the energy that you would have to expel
yes.
to get into alignment with that may really just not be worth the effort. You know?
And exactly, and who you are meant to be.
Right.
And so this idea that you can do what you love, and I think we all can,
mm-hmm.
but it may look differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you like sports, doesn't mean that you can make money being a football player or a baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
But it may mean that you can be a photographer or a coach or, you know, or a writer or, you know, a historical writer on baseball. You know,
mm-hmm.
who knows? There's tons of ways that you can do what you love,
mm-hmm.
be part of your life, but when we get that fixed vision of what it has to look like.
Yeah, because it really is, I mean, especially for creative people,
mm-hmm.
it really is the process
mm-hmm.
and enjoying that. And I don't know, you know, that it's really just sort of programming that at the end of this book or,
yeah.
you know, whatever, you turn it into a movie like
right.
J.K. Rowling's, and then you have, you know, it's like that's the programming part.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny, too, because I was talking to somebody the other day, and he's like, oh, yeah, I write sci-fi books. I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's so cool, because I'm always loving people who use their art. I just love it. I have ideas, but I'm not a person that writes. That's not my passion. I like to write nonfiction, like we write together,
mm-hmm.
but you're definitely the writer. And you call me your muse, which I think is cute.
You are my muse.
But, you know,
I couldn't do without you.
You know, and he was really into turning this into like a pre-teen, kind of like a Twilight saga.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, awesome, you know, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I'm like, well, get it out there because, you know, you can get it in small areas now. But the internet has opened up so many avenues for people to get their stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't keep it hidden. Get it out there. See what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm really waiting for the right person, the bigger thing. I'm
really?
Like, yeah. I'm like, okay. You know, I don't know everybody's path, you know.
Right.
I'm always like, hey, just get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
Just get it out there.
Well, I know, like, when I finished mine, you know, you go, Mom, we got to get this out here before, you know, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, exactly.
And, I mean, you were just like a little, you know, you were just a great kid to put it up there on Kindle for me.
Yes.
And, you know, 99 cents, that's what I said. Just let people read it. It's so much fun.
It's a great summer.
I'm not going to try and, you know, squeeze 10 bucks out of you.
It's a great summer read. If you're part of Amazon's monthly package, you get to have it for free because it's part of the deal with
That's
Amazon.
Right. That's right.
So I say go there. Go to Cinco de Mayo.
And how do you spell that, Julie?
Sinkhole.
That's right.
Yeah, that's how it's spelled. Cinco de Mayo.
Birth of the Zomboys.
Yes.
And you know what the Zomboys, their mantra is? It ain't pretty, but it's gritty.
Yeah.
It ain't pretty,
I love
but
it.
It's gritty.
Okay, before we go, because we only got 2 minutes, I want to say, everybody, follow us on Twitter at Prosperity Duo, Prosperity Duo, because I'm going to be trying some Twitter stuff this week at hashtag, hopefully, I'm going to hopefully see, you know, 5 years from now. We're going to see if I can do this or not. Because I want to know what your goals are 5 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play. I want to have some fun with Twitter, and I want to know, because I'm just learning. I'm learning, I'm trying, and
so you're thinking goals 5 years now. I'm thinking what they look like.
No, not goals. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Achieved goals. What your life's going to be 5 years from now. You know, how is it going to look? And let's have some fun. Let's as if.
I'm the director of Zomboys. F you, people.
That's right.
F you, Hollywood.
I'm Kickstarter.
Indiegogo.
Exactly.
They love me.
Exactly. Well, when you hear the people that are using Kickstarter,
yeah.
and you're like, these are A-listers? What the heck?
Yeah. That just is like, yeah, exactly. You got Adam Carolla.
Yeah.
They're going to Kickstarter. You're like, oh, geez.
Oh, who's that guy, too? I can't even think about it. Oh, I can't think of his name. But several people that, it's just like, you're like, is this how you're getting your money? You know, like, this is interesting. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that Hollywood's a nut to crack, isn't it? It's a hard nut to crack. I have one more question before we go, but go to Prosperity Duo at Twitter. Follow us. You know, like us at Christine Marie and Julie. Christine Marie and Julie is great. Go to our ClutterflyEffect.com. Sign up for some cool free stuff. Before we go, Mom, before we play music, I got one question.
Go for it.
Okay. You know, I never park in handicapped spots at grocery stores. I never do.
I know you don't.
I don't park anywhere handicapped. But I'm telling you right now, I feel the bathroom handicapped stall is up for grabs. I just don't know.
Oh, I agree.
And I just want to know, am I wrong? Am I wrong by going in there?
No, you're so right. You get all that space. You get to hang your purse up.
Yes.
Come on.
And sometimes I just need a little help sitting down, too, you know?
Oh.
Or just chilling, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the other ones are so small.
Mm-hmm.
I got to back in, and you're like, really? So I just feel like the handicapped stall in the bathroom.
No glory hole.
I feel that's like, okay, I just wanted to ask John's opinion. I'm not breaking any etiquette rules.
No, not at all.
Okay,
no,
if I'm wrong,
you got my
let me wrong.
Blessing.
Okay.
Not only do you have my blessing.
Awesome. There we go. There we go. And the other day I was in one, and I'm like, okay, girlfriends out there, I know that some of you would prefer just to hover. And I was in one. I'm like, really? Yeah, hover, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Bring a scrubber.
That's
you,
but, you know, moms can hover, but not bottoms on toilet seats.
That's right.
Or should they? I don't know.
No.
Now I don't know. Now I'm confused.
That was my question, my quandary for the week. But I'm glad I got clarification from Mama of the appropriate etiquette and so forth.
That's right, girlfriend.
And so forth. And I also want to say, too, kind of we're leaving really soon. As soon as the music plays, we're going to sing our song. I did something in a day that was very brave of me. I had to go on the roof today, and I had to get on a ladder. And I did both those things, even though I was kind of afraid of heights.
Mm-hmm.
I did it anyway.
You did it anyway.
And I thought, you know, it's not jumping out of an airplane with a parachute.
No, you invoked your inner Winston Churchill, you know. You did it. Never give up. Never, ever give up.
I did it.
And you were on that ladder.
And I got on that roof.
Yes, you got on that roof.
And I took care of business.
You go, girlfriend.
And I felt, you know, tired because I had a cold. But besides that, I was like, hey, I'm proud of myself.
That's right. And you want everybody to know.
I did. I want to share that because
yeah,
that was my little victory.
All those people out in Massachusetts, they went there. They're like, V for victory.
Oh, great. Julie got on a ladder and got to the roof.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? It's, everybody's victory is different.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's
and they're going to say this. Did Christine Marie just say glory hole?
Yeah,
no, she didn't. She said morning glory.
Morning glory. Glory, morning glory, muffins. That's what she loves.
What's a story, morning glory? Okay, let's sing us off, girlfriend.
Okay. One, two, three. Everybody needs a good girlfriend with a heart of gold. See you later, everyone.
Thank
Have a great week.